Happy New Year to all of our nerd fam. I'm Danny Fernandez, and sitting across from me is
Iffy Wadiway, and I hope that you do accomplish all those resolutions you set before yourself, because you got it. You got this year. It's a new year. It's a new you. Say bye to your old boo. You know what I'm saying?
Wait, what was that? You said say bye to your old boo.
Yeah.
No, people, I mean, hang on. If your old boo has been down for the count all these years, it's like now, new me, you know, that person that stuck around with me during my bad times, I'm getting rid of them. That doesn't make sense.
Like, I'm out of here. I need to find someone else.
I want to find someone that only likes the new shiny me, not the person that was down before I made it. Welcome to Nerdificent. We are strolling down memory lane again this week with some of our favorite moments from the podcast from this past year. Iffy, does anything jump out at the top of your head?
Like of favorite moments?
No, just your life.
Oh, just my life?
No, yes, favorite moments.
I was about to give you something out of my life. Yeah, no, there's been tons of favorite moments. I think, like I said on Twitter, you know, Hector detailing the
Ooh,
MCU.
Hector's so good.
Going down Doctor Who and hearing those, like hearing Riley's great story about how Doctor Who inspires her. And even, you know, hanging with old Cannon and Chris, you know, that was a good time. And like a lot of y'all, a lot of the nerd fam really appreciated us touching on the LGBTQ plus community in the nerd community. And, you know, that's why we did it. We want you to feel seen.
Yeah, you know, I was really surprised that Lucy Tomlin Brenner, who did our Halloween episode, was able to do Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
There are just so many of them. And she did it so well in a way that was entertaining, that it wasn't just like, you know, reading off a Wikipedia or something. Like, I was surprised that she was able to do that. And I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And we got tons of more fun like that coming in 2019. But for right now, here are some of our favorite clips.
Iffy, I have something I need to say, though. We are, I don't know if y'all know this, a part of How Stuff Works Comedy.
Yeah.
We are two comedians, and we're not going to just make this an educational, boring podcast. If you want that, go somewhere else. The reason why Iffy and I got picked up and got hired and were sent some monies from How Stuff Works to be on this network is because our previous podcast, where we had a really good chemistry together. So we like sharing our experiences. If you want someone to go over minute details of a nerdy thing, this is not the podcast for you.
Also, it feels like some people just want the boring part about nerd stuff. I think the fun, and I know some people just took their headphones and like, yeah, I think the fun in nerddom and the information from nerddom is people's reactions, which is why we have tons of guests who are passionate about the source material we're talking about, even if we may not be as well-versed in it. That way we have at least one person in the seats jazzed up, and also we get to turn around and let them tell us about their experience and get to share that with y'all. This isn't going to be... You know, we'll give you the rundown on the basics, but we're not going to like be like pop quiz. Here's all the stuff because
in episode 36 of. Well,
yeah, because
I
feel like if we did a podcast about that, people would only use it for evil. No one would use it for good. People would only use it to
gatekeep and argue with us. Yeah. I do want to say, though, our most listened to episode still is our MCU episode with Hector Navarro, where Dan and I were talking about this earlier, where we did go on tangents. We talked about what we loved about the films and what we didn't. It wasn't just like, here's a factual, and then Thor showed up, and then this and that. Like, we gave you the main highlights of what you needed to know from each film, but then we discussed and debated about them. And I think that, and also laughed a lot. And I think that is what makes this podcast great.
I don't know. I think you guys should be ashamed of yourselves for having emotional reactions to things that you love. Absolutely should be ashamed of yourselves.
I really like our Comic-Con episode where I talked about how I got in by pretending to be with Party Boy from Jackass.
Yeah.
And like, those are the behind the things things that you need to know about.
Yeah.
And how Iffy, you got in trouble for like... I don't know. You were like sexting with a girl on AOL Messenger.
Oh, yeah,
or something.
When the FBI came to my house for
like those are
cyber.
Interesting, fun
Whoa.
Facts
yeah.
to know in nerd culture. So Speaking of which, we are covering with Kyle here today, who is an expert in Avatar: The Last Airbender. You actually have it tattooed on your body.
I do. I have the symbol of the Air Nomads tattooed on my body with the words "Let go," because air is the element of freedom.
How many people confuse that for a Frozen tattoo?
Most people confuse it for either 666, no
Love
joke,
it. Love
or they think it's a Celtic symbol.
Okay.
Can I see it? Yeah. Wait, I want to see it again.
Yeah.
It's so great because I see how it could be Frozen. Yeah, I also have my fandom tattooed above my wrist too.
I love it. Nice. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and I got the biggest meanie. I was trying to think of a non-curse word way to describe this character. One of his battle cries, Imperious Rex, and we all got it pretty close.
That's so
proximity.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Imperious Rex, because I wanted a nerd tattoo that would be subtle and cool. Also, I like it being a reference that not every nerd gets straight up, just speaking of gatekeeping, but not even like to make people feel bad about it, but like one of those like, if you know, you know, because I'm a big Marvel guy, really love just the whole Illuminati behind it, which...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry if you don't know by now, Imperious Rex is Namor the Submariner's battle cry. That's what he yells when he goes into battle, and it's Latin for powerful king.
It's kind of like if you've descended or ascended, depending on your point of view, to like a level of nerddom, you know, like you'll know, and then it's like, okay, cool, you're on my level.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, he's the worst. And people were looking at me when I had this tattoo because everyone knows I'm a huge Black Panther fan, but there was a whole arc where him and T'Challa were at odds, and they're like, how do you feel about this? I was like, conflicted.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. I'm an Emma Frost fan from Marvel, so I understand conflicting feelings. You know, it's only about 3 writers got her right, so I understand your feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we totally dive into the timeline of Avatar: The Last Airbender, what was your first introduction to it? How did you did you watch it when it first came out on Nickelodeon?
I did not watch it when it first came out on Nickelodeon because I was in high school and I was too cool to watch it. But then a friend of mine, when I got into college, was like, you need to watch the show. You absolutely need to watch it. And it had just ended. And so I got a hard drive with the 3 seasons of The Last Airbender, and I just ran through it, and I watched it at such a perfect moment in my life because so many of the lessons just kind of like, I don't know, emboldened me and made me a better person in a lot of ways, and especially helped me like come into my own as like a queer person. So like, I don't know, just a lot of ways it really helped me out. It was the best.
Yeah, I also didn't watch it in high school because, I don't know, so I was looking at the timeline. First aired February 21st, 2005, and that's when it premiered, and I was in my junior year of high school. Same thing, like the area that I lived in, it wasn't really cool to watch quote-unquote cartoons, and I was still kind of secretly watching Dragon Ball Z, but that was something that I started when I was 10, so a little bit different.
But Dragon Ball Z can span a lot of age ranges, I feel like.
True, but it was still weird for me to watch it as a teenage girl,
where
I was. And then I was looking, because Legend of Korra then came out in 2012, and I was like, oh, I was getting married then, and then I was getting divorced. So, like, I actually didn't really grow up, I didn't really watch this series at all. Like, I still haven't really picked it up, and that's why we brought on Kyle to kind of, one, because you're a huge expert and love it, but also to kind of fill in the gaps for me.
Yay.
You don't need to write me anybody. I know that I need to watch it along with a billion other things that I haven't had time to watch, but I'm just saying those times in my life were times when I wasn't, when I was married, I would have to secretly like record anime that I wanted to watch. It was so weird. My husband kind of made me feel weird for being an adult that watched cartoons. It's just a reminder. And again, I'm saying, I know it's not cartoons, but like that's what people call it. And just a reminder to me that there's still so many areas like that where we're really lucky to be in an area. And I think in like part of nerd culture where it's cool or acceptable. But like there's still so many areas and probably people listening where like they can't even openly talk about it with their coworkers because they're seen as weird. Like if you don't have children, especially too.
I think if I could go back in time and tell myself in high school, like, you know, you need to watch this show because it is a kid show. It is on Nickelodeon, but it was written in such a way, because originally it wasn't necessarily intended to be a kid show, but they randomly got a few chances at Nickelodeon and they kind of turned it into a kid show. But the themes and the stories, so much of it is so dark. Like, they tell such an adult story. And by the third season, it's like, oh no, like straight up, like you can bloodbend people. Like, it's messed up. Can we curse on here?
No, but we, okay, cool. If you do,
then
we'll
I'll say
bleep
messed
it.
Up. That's cool. Messed up. It is some messed up stuff. There we go.
So wait, what is bloodbending?
So waterbenders, when they are during a full moon, changes a little bit in Legend of Korra, but in The Last Airbender, waterbenders on a full moon can bend the water in your body and basically turn you into a puppet, which is horrifying. And it also looks extremely painful. And it's like, once it gets to that level, it's like, oh yeah, you're not playing around. Like, that's really messed up. Yeah. Theoretically, they could pull the blood out of your body if they wanted to.
Oh man. Yeah, no, it's so funny because looking at this timeline, everything clicks back. Yeah, so it dropped February 21st, 2005, which was coming on my birthday in my junior year of high school. Born February 26th.
Yes, you bring this up like as many times as you can.
You know.
I love it.
Junior year of high school.
I love
school.
You.
Deep in my weeb phase. You know, I'm watching Cowboy Bebop, recording Witch Hunter Robin on VHS. Got the Naruto DVDs given to me at this point. So yeah, no, I look down on Avatar heavy. Like heavy. Just the worst type mm-hmm. of... And that's why it's so funny when people gatekeep. Because when you do that gatekeeping stuff, you are only hurting yourself because you do... Especially when you do like elitist things like that. Like Avatar is a beautiful show. I've popped in and watched episodes kind of, I think, like during season 2 and 3 mm-hmm. because it gained traction at my school and people kind of were talking about it. And so, like, I peeped in and then I graduated and people were openly talking. So I kind of, but I never gave it the honest full watch. And it was all because of stuff like that. I think I was that type of person. It's definitely a personality type. Where if something is popping, you want to find a reason not to like it. I did that with MF Doom, and that's mm-hmm. one of my – it was with MF Doom that I told myself I would never do it again because everyone loved MF Doom, like, I think around same time, junior, senior year of high school. And I was so like, he's overrated for no reason. Like, I did not even know an MF Doom song, but because everyone was so into him, I had to be the guy who was not into him. So then he first did a feature on November Has Come with the Gorillaz, and that's when I heard it, and your boy loved the rap. But of course, I've already set up this persona that I hate MF Doom. So much so that people were like, this is a dumb thing that if he's doing, but okay. Yeah. And like I was like, yeah, no. But I was like, okay, I'll give it to you guys. His verse on November Has Come was great. Obviously, at this point, that's the only MF Doom song I've heard. And I'm like, oh, man. And then it wasn't until like I graduated high school and I was like, let me just check this out because I really never have. And I listened to Food, which came out in 2006. And it was made for people like me. It was literally a rapper that was made for me. MF Doom, he was supposed to be Dr. Doom. He intercut like old Fantastic Four clips into his raps, like stuff that would blow my mind. I didn't know about, didn't even listen to because of this random need to be superior I was going to say nerddom, but it had nothing to just to be cool because I have to go against the grain.
Mm-hmm. So for me, like on its most simple form, Doctor Who is a serialized sci-fi series about a time-traveling alien who travels space and time in a spaceship that looks like – a time machine and a spaceship that looks like a police box from the 1960s. Mm-hmm. And basically travels around usually with a companion once in a while alone but very rarely because it shouldn't travel alone. Finding people, like kind of stumbling upon people who are in trouble and helping them. And that's basically the premise of the show. So it's not unlike how like the premise of Star Trek is like, hey, we have a thing that's happening in this area of space. Let's go check it out and see what's going on. That's basically what Doctor Who is. Like they're often like it's kind of quirky and at the TARDIS, which is the ship that they fly around in, which stands for time and relative dimension in space. Like they'll be like, oh, we're going to go to this cool vacation planet. And then they show up instead of a planet instead. And like there's like trouble a brewing and they'll kind of figure out what's going on and then stop it.
Are they often here on Earth or are they often in other?
Yes.
Okay. Both.
Yes.
Equally, would you say?
It goes from season to season.
Okay.
It can be, some seasons are really earth heavy. We've actually had a pretty earth heavy several years.
Okay.
But other seasons, they almost never come to earth. So
interesting.
This most recent season.
But they always look human.
For the most part, there are aliens that are aliens. But okay. For the most part.
The doctor's always.
The doctor
human.
Looks, well, humans look timeless. Sorry, that's a quote from the show. Yeah, there's a lot of humanoid races on this show.
Wait, can you say that quote again?
There's an episode. There's actually a quote from the show. Someone says, "Well, you look human." He goes, "No, you look Time Lord."
Oh yeah.
So
okay.
There
so
are
time
a lot
lords
of
look what yeah. we perceive to be a
yeah.
human.
Time form. Lords basically okay. look like humans, but they have two hearts, and that's okay. like the difference. That's the big difference between them. And they also can regenerate and have like longer. And they also can. They've also
I have
mastered
so many
time
questions.
Travel.
I'm really yeah. glad that. So I'm just going to ask some questions.
Sure.
And I'm going to let you continue. So. Do they choose what they look like when they regenerate?
Some can, not all can.
Okay.
Some people have random. Some Time Lords have random regenerations. Others can choose it. It's not super dug into in the plot. That's kind of one of those things where it's just like, in one episode, the writers thought it was funny to have this woman change her appearance a bunch. So I guess some Time Lords can. The show is so fast and loose with canon that okay. it's like really fun to watch fans then like scramble to try to like go, no, this is what this means. Because basically what happened is there was one episode in the 70s where a character named Romana, who was the Doctor's companion, but she was also a Time Lord, Time Lady. They replaced the actress in the second season that they had her. So they had her regenerate into this other actress. And so they just had like a jokey scene the first episode with her where Romana kept walking in with different forms until she like solidified the one
oh,
she was going to take
okay.
and then travel with the doctor. And it was Lala Ward, who was amazing. So that's like, so then like when you, if you play the Doctor Who role-playing game and you uh-huh. play, like if you're playing as a Time Lord, you can choose like customized regeneration as one of your options. Whereas
oh,
you play
okay.
the Doctor, you have like, you can't choose your regeneration. Like the Doctor can't. Like consciously choose his or her regeneration.
Got it.
Kind of happens at random. Randomized generation.
So there's two questions I
yes.
have. So I remember there was a limit on how many regenerations that the
sure
doctor
was.
Has. Have we reached that point?
It's been reset. Because the thing is, the thing with that, something like that, and that is a thing that was written into the show back in the like 70s. Mm-hmm. And when they first started like fleshing out Time Lord culture, because when the show first started in 63 with William Hartnell, the first Doctor, the phrases that I'm using, Time Lord, regeneration, two hearts, Gallifrey, none of that was part of the show yet. That was all, Doctor was just a weird alien, and he and his granddaughter were traveling the universe in this police box that, like, TARDIS has now become, like, on the show, the term people use for these ships. But in that episode, like, the granddaughter just called her ship the TARDIS because of the initials. That wasn't like the official title for it, but it's just been retconned over time. Like, they're all called TARDISes.
Yeah.
So the original one was like 13 regenerations. And then what happened was at the end, when Matt Smith became Peter Capaldi, there was, they had squeezed in an extra regeneration when they did the 50th anniversary special. Mm-hmm. So there was a regeneration between Paul McGann, who was the Doctor who, the actor who played the Doctor in the 1990s TV movie, who was the eighth Doctor, and Christopher Eccleston, who was the ninth Doctor. They squeezed in John Hurt as what we call the War Doctor. And the reason for that is because Eccleston didn't come back for the 50th anniversary special. So they replaced, so since he wouldn't come back for it, they wrote in this new version of a Doctor to kind of fulfill his role.
Okay.
So the idea is like, basically when the show came back in 2005, when it kind of like had this soft reboot where it still had the old continuity, but it was kind of a new format show. Now, it went from being a serialized 22-minute episode show to being an hour each week, and each hour is like a pretty self-contained story. They introduced this concept of there had been this awful genocidal war in between when the show ended and when it came back that they called the Time War. And at the end of that Time War, the Doctor, it was between the Doctor's race, the Time Lords, and their greatest enemy, the Daleks. And the end of the Time War was, at that point, was written to be that the Doctor did something that was called the Moment. He unleashed a weapon called the Moment that destroyed both races. And he was the only survivor of the war. And that's why Eccleston's Doctor is so torn and tormented, because he has this guilt of being the destructor of his own race and another race as well, which is very against what normally the credo of a Doctor is, which is like very anti-genocidal.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like there's an episode in Classic Who called Genesis of the Daleks where the Time Lords send the Doctor, which is Tom Baker's Doctor, back in time to the Daleks' homeworld to try to prevent them from ever being created in the first place. And he ends up not doing it because he doesn't feel like he morally has the right to deny another species the chance to exist. And it's a really interesting, fascinating episode. And so that was kind of the crux of the new show, was the Doctor had like broken his own promise, and that's why they brought in John Hurt. Like, he was like, he hasn't even referred himself as the Doctor. He's the one who failed to be the Doctor, and then that's why he's, the other ones are all feeling guilty from then on. So that was one regeneration that was squeezed in. And also, you may remember during David Tennant's run, there's an episode where he starts to regenerate and then like sends his energy out of him into a hand and turns into a new Doctor. Mm-hmm. So that was like counted as regeneration as well. And so basically what happened was, when Matt Smith was at the end of his run, he said, like, I've used my regenerations. I'm dying. When I die, I'm dead. And then through plot thing that I won't spoil if people haven't already heard it, they like reset his regenerations. And so Peter Capaldi was the first Doctor of this new cycle. And they've kind of now gone like, we don't know how many he has, because they don't, I think when they made 13 as the number, that was back when the show had no idea they would last and come back after a break. So it was easy to toss out like a number that seems super, like when you're on the fourth Doctor, it's easy to go, 13 regenerations, we'll see whatever. Now that we're on the 13th Doctor, it's like, we don't want to say a set number, because we might hit 26 at some point, because we're kind of going through these people every 3 years or so.
Yeah, that's so true.
I wanted to go through some of these facts about when it first premiered.
So I was all over the map there, sorry.
I want to stop you, because I want you to go through those facts after these messages.
And we are back. I wanted to touch on the CW seem, their superhero shows, well, several of their shows, but definitely their superhero shows seem to be really taking initiative as far as including more queer characters. I know there's Thunder in Black Lightning, there's Curtis Holt on Arrow, there's The Flash's Captain Singh, there's Alex Danvers in Supergirl, Sarah Lance in Legends of Tomorrow, Ava Sharp in Legends of Tomorrow. Now we have Ruby Rose as Batwoman. I don't know if you saw that was announced.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
I think she'll be awesome.
And a main character too, you know, like a huge
Batwoman
who's one of the most fascinating characters.
And, you know, if it was a few years ago and you told me that they would announce Ruby Rose as Batwoman and she would be getting tons of hate, I'd be like, oh, is it because it's a lesbian character? No, because nerds are bad. And if they think you don't, because, you know, all nerds are the perfect casting director, all these great fan casting picks that we see. By the way, that's what's so funny, is every time fans cast something, it's always trash. Or the budget would be insane. Or that person would not dedicate. Like, it's like, get out of here. Like,
Well, they were upset with, was it Heath Ledger when he was originally cast as the Joker?
That's so true.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's also, isn't Voltron have LGBT characters? Yeah.
They just confirmed it at Comic-Con too.
Thinking of even video games, because I forgot this reference, Tracer from Overwatch, the one of the main faces of Overwatch is a lesbian. So
yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Steven Universe, which is brilliant, beautiful, such a positive, bright. I mean, even their fans are bad. Bad. I want to like roll up a newspaper / like spray them.
But I also think it's the issue. I mean, Canon sometimes deals with this working at PlayStation. There is sometimes a huge amount, it seems like it's a large number of people on Twitter, but it's because it makes people's voices sound bigger than it actually is. And a lot of times the internet will freak out about something. It doesn't necessarily reflect the majority. It doesn't reflect sales. It doesn't reflect the majority of a fan base.
Yeah.
It doesn't really reflect anything except for internet, you know, Twitter hype, which sometimes means absolutely nothing. It's bizarre.
Yeah, no, that's true. I know that you're good friends with Kelly Marie Tran, and she experienced like so much hate that she got off social media. But the thing is that when I was at Comic-Con, there were so many people dressed like Rose Tico that it was just, I mean, it flooded. Like, people just love her so much. But it's hard when like all you're seeing is
a small minority of Star Wars fans.
Very loud, obsessive harassment. Yeah,
and the majority of Star Wars fans are super lovely, nice people. I think a lot of it has to do with too, with people will have multiple accounts that they'll log into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It makes, if you can have represent so many different people on Twitter that it allows to for a falsehood of what actually is. But it's also, I mean, it's why, you know, Kelly's not on, you know, Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's because sometimes you don't need to read everything, all the negativity.
Yeah, and also it's one thing that's important to know. It may seem like when you're getting all the notifications and all the people in your mentions, you know, it may seem like, damn, this is a huge amount of people who think this. But only 7% of Americans are using Twitter. That's 7%.
What?
Wow.
You know, oh, yeah. 7% my gosh.
Of Americans are using Twitter.
That's a lot of fake accounts.
That's a lot of fake accounts, and that's a lot of, like, that's not a lot of people. So,
yeah.
So that, and you know what? It is, I find that to be true, because whenever something big happens on Twitter, and you do kind of step out to the real world, and you're like, have you heard of this? And someone hasn't, you're like, how? But, like, when you see a number like that, 7%, you're like, I guess not, you know, yeah. I guess it isn't as big a world as we think it is. It just feels that way.
It is mm-hmm. people from other countries and smaller areas as well. I was also going to say, talking on the thing of online harassment, I mean, it's something that Canon has had to deal with working with PlayStation and everything. I don't know if you can talk about that at all.
You get like death threats from LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
They used to be really common. So back when the PlayStation Network was a little bit less reliable than it is now, anytime we'd have an outage, it's totally common for people that have PlayStation in their LinkedIn profile to get death threats in your inbox.
Wow.
It's fairly common. And it's endemic to the whole gaming industry. Like, I have female friends that work at studios, and a lot of them won't even put what the name of the studio they're working at, because the game will get released, and then someone will be like, well, this level, this thing was misdesigned, so I'll go and find a female graphic artist and just start sending her death threats and hate mail, and then everyone just bandwagons. And
I remember that was a huge thing that happened with, I believe, Mass Effect, mm-hmm. where they were blaming this one woman for ruining the game, and someone mm-hmm. had to come in and be like, well, she didn't even have that huge a part of it. There was actually these men, but you guys are targeting her.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. And, you know, does PlayStation do anything to protect y'all? Like, can you report these people and, you know, get their accounts yanked or anything?
I mean, it depends on the social media you're using. I mean, LinkedIn has a pretty robust reporting system for offensive material, mm-hmm. so it's not so bad. But
that's
eventually,
so insane. LinkedIn is like not the thing that you should be doing. Like, LinkedIn, you can see where they work and uh-huh. who that person is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That doesn't, like, Twitter, I understand, because you're like a random anime avatar.
You're
but
anonymous,
like
yeah.
LinkedIn, the fact that someone is, oh man.
I mean, but the craziest thing is, you would think that Twitter would have a more robust reporting system than LinkedIn, because LinkedIn, at least you're a level of professionals, where Twitter should be doing everything it can. But we're learning more and more every day. I'm going to just leave it at that. You know, I'm just leave it at that.
Yeah. I think one thing, and this probably may sound crass, but you just sort of learn to rise above it and ignore it.
Yeah.
Because it used to really bother me, and then I just started saying, you know, none of this matters. Like, they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
Like, these people are hiding behind a keyboard, and all the people that I run into, like, I have a, when we launched the PS4, everyone got jackets that said PS4 launch team, and I would just sometimes wear that out not thinking. And I would have people come up in grocery stores and in malls and just randomly, and they'd be like, oh my God, you worked on the PS4? Can I shake your hand? And they just, like, the fans are like the best part, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
I
think it's important to remember the good experiences more than the bad ones, because if we let the bad ones kind of occupy our mind space, then everything's going to just feel
It's
awful.
So difficult. I feel like, for me, I look at it as a glass of water with the amount of sexual harassment that I deal with. And mm-hmm. I send it, Chris, I feel like you have been such a positive. I just want to take this moment. You're just smiling. You and Iffy have seen so much of the harassment that I've dealt with trying to be in this space. And I just, you both are very supportive men in my life. But I wanted to say, I look at it as like a glass of water, and it fills up, fills up, fills up, fills up. And then eventually I can't take it anymore and it overflows.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of spiral from the harassment, and I might take a break. I might step back, and it sucks. I agree, because I want to read all my comments. I want to mm-hmm. answer the messages,
yep.
but that means I have to see all the really bad ones.
Yep.
And it's very hard mentally to handle that.
I think the scary thing is how Twitter is like the new KKK hood. I mean, I do mean that, though, because I mean, people, it's so crazy how people who are hateful, spiteful individuals they do it in a way where they can still go to their day jobs. Like, you must morally know deep down inside that you're doing something wrong and hateful if you're acting that way. But I think you're right. It's a lot of people who are on the internet. And I think a biggest way that I've used to combat hatred is with our group, meeting nerds who are positive, whether it's queer, people of color, or just people who are loving, you know, people who are doing something for the better good. Whatever your group is, it's finding people in person to talk to. Because I think the best way to combat the internet hate is making a presence outside in person is the best way to combat that.
I was just going to add, and I don't want to get too political, but, you know, a big part of the Trump election for me was processing how kind of awful it made me feel and how terrible I thought everything was. And what I eventually decided after kind of coming out of that fog was that, you know, I can't change anyone's mind. I can't fight the hate directly. But what I can do is I can spend my time, my energy, and my money on helping the people in my community and then building that up. And that's kind of what made me get into activism. It's why I volunteer at the center. That's why the LA Gaming Society is starting to have fundraisers for the queer youth of Los Angeles so that we can get people, you know, onto a better track so that they're not homeless or not alone or they don't feel so depressed all the time by all this negativity. And I can say that by putting my focus towards those kinds of things, my outlook has improved exponentially. Even though the news on a fairly consistent basis
negative.
Is crazy, like having a positive outlet where I can take kind of that nervous, negative energy and work it into something has made a world of difference for me.
Well, I mean, you saw, like, you see negative homophobic, like Kotaku would have like a negative, you know, this homophobic thing happened today. They didn't write about like our E3 party, how we raised so much money for the, I think we raised, I don't even know how many, like five?
Six, it was over $5,000.
Over $5,000 just for video games for LGBT, you know, youth to play at the center. So that they can have an outlet, which is amazingly enough, by the way, video games is such a healthy outlet that brings people together. And then seeing people being brought together who are queer nerds, who are 30 to 40 years old, you know, who never had that outlet and in an adult space. I think there are positive things that are happening by us focusing on our community. I'm hoping that maybe the news can eventually pick up on some of those positive articles.
To quote a great movie by the name of Nightcrawler, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, and that's that's what the news is in the business of. The moment the news became the business, it's less about, you know, sharing the news and more so what can we do that's going to, you know, activate people and get a reaction out of them and get them sharing our stuff. So yeah, it does. I find that in multiple communities and multiple things throughout the news scope, everything positive kind of gets swept under the rug because they'd rather get someone mad who's going to retweet it and then say something snarky than someone's going to add their snark. Me, usually I'm involved in that chain of snark and RT. But yeah, so it is, and I think that is a great advice to anyone in their communities is if you are feeling hopeless, are feeling like, how do I make a change? Everyone thinks that, you know, I find that a lot of people believe that you need $1 million to make meaningful change, and that's just not the case. You know,
absolutely.
Meaningful change could just be as simple as mentoring, you know, someone who is, you know, just like you or someone who you think needs it.
Iffy, did you want to go over some of your favorite games?
Yeah. We're just going to do a quick dash.
Do it. Oh!
Through the games because there are so many. And I just want to talk about the like huge influential ones instead of just going through all of them that have spanned from 1991 to this very year. So you had, Sonics 1 and 2. 2 was the game. I feel like it was the staple game, the spin dash, the one everyone played. And then 3 took it up a notch by introducing Knuckles, because really that's a third character in this franchise that you now get to play. You're able to play as Tails or Miles if you want to be Danny with the second player, and they would be able to run besides you. So that was like the two player aspect. I think the next big game in the series actually came after Sonic and Knuckles. I didn't realize these were back to back. I always felt there was so much time between them. And there was a Sonic and Sonic the Hedgehog 3 dropped in 1994. 4 years later, we get Sonic Adventure. And Sonic Adventure came out for the Dreamcast. And it was a moment because the Dreamcast was hot at the time. It was the reason people. Yeah, it was the reason people bought Dreamcast. And then it introduced that, like, Dreamcast used to have this, I forget the name of it, but it was like a Tamagotchi, that you would put in, and you would put the, what is it, the chows, the chows from the game, and you'd be able to take care of it outside of it. So basically, all this, like, all the kids going crazy over the Pokemon, the Pokeball Plus that you get to, it was like, we've been on that since the Dreamcast.
Old school.
Yeah, yeah, we're sounding like old crotchety
people.
Back in 2000.
So there were great games after that because you had
Sonic 06.
Yeah, yeah. that was when people
all your emails. Yeah. To...
Oh man. Well, we're. I'm not.
Sorry,
even gonna...
I'm getting you out of whack.
No, no. You're right because you're mentioning the whole thing because Sonic fans, which I use the term loosely because this isn't very fan is a fan centric way to act. Oftentimes, we'll say that Sonic Adventure or Sonic Adventure 2 was the last good game, or whatever Sonic they like was the last good.
Yep, 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 yep.
But one thing everyone kind of did agree with was Sonic. Which one was it? Yes, Sonic Rush for the DS, which was not on this list, which makes me smarter than the internet.
Interesting.
Sonic Rush was super fun.
Really?
And in it, you played as Sonic, and also your counterpart was, what was her name? Blaze the Cat.
Blaze the Cat.
And it was a very fast-paced, fun game. It was, and everyone agreed, because, you know, I hate when I really like a game and everyone's like, no, you shouldn't like it. It's bad. Luckily, that didn't happen with this game. Everyone liked it. It had a fun story. It looked great. It was such a blast. Sonic Rush. But then
was Knuckles in that? I mean, how could you enjoy that if your favorite character wasn't in that?
Okay, Sonic, I like you. I guess I guess you're kind of cool. I guess.
I think it was super cool that you got to play Sonic in Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's so cool.
Yes. Getting to be a part of something like this, like those things just sort of like kind of fall into your lap. It's,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's one of the things that kind of, and
that's like a crossover.
Absolutely. Same thing with you know, Wreck-It
Ralph.
All of a sudden it was like somebody called up and they're like, yeah, Disney wants you for something. I was like, for what? And they're like, for this thing, Wreck-It Ralph. And I'm like, okay, what am I doing? They're like, then you're doing Sonic. I'm like, no, something's wrong.
Right.
And I was like, no, I don't think that, you know. And then showed up, and they're like, yeah, we wanted Sonic the Hedgehog, and they're like, you got to use our guy. And I was like,
yeah,
all right,
so
really?
So okay,
because that was gonna be my question on the meta side. Was it a them hitting you up and you needing permission? But so they wanted Sonic, and Sega was like, Rogers.
I would imagine it was a licensing thing. I mean, I think that's how that works. You know, I mean, obviously I'm a brilliant voice actor and they were lucky to have me regardless. And it's just pure luck that the licensing. No, I actually think that with most of those characters, I think that they mandate that if it, you know, because when you think about something like, you know, Disney doing a Wreck-It Ralph with all those different video game characters, I think if they're going to say, we're going to use your guys or gals, we want to have, you know, the characters be honored.
They did because they had Kyle Bear as Ryu.
That's what I was going to go to now. Is it seems like you're in Sega's wheelhouse now. They're like, you're Sonic.
Happy.
You're Sonic.
Yeah, I mean, until I'm not. I mean,
once they see you take a selfie with Mario.
Yeah, there you go. You know. It's like, oh, he's doing a Twitch channel and he's,
you're out.
He's as the character. We don't allow that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But yeah, that was pretty much the games. And then, you know, the first Sonic series that we referenced with Jaleel White was the height of like 90s game fever when we had your Super Mario movies, when you had the Super Mario TV show.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
They were like, this, you need a TV show because games are popping right now. Yep. But then after that, you got, I think there was the Sonic anime series before
Sonic X.
Yeah, Sonic X. Yes, I remember Sonic X because Sonic X was one of those shows that were... I was a little too old for it at the time. It came out 2004, 2005, which means I was a junior in high school.
That's adorable.
And I was like, I know that. You
you're
know
like,
how old
you're
you
like,
were.
You're like, 1994. I'm like, you're in graduated high school.
But they had video games back then.
Oh yeah, I was in it though. I was like, look, I don't care what people say. I love Sonic, a Sonic anime. Let's go.
That's cool.
But then we got the Sonic series that everyone's talking about. Did I skip? Was it Sonic X then Sonic Boom? I'm not crazy.
No. Sonic Boom.
I was onto my fourth wife, I think, at the time that Sonic X was coming out. So, you know.
Yeah, using that. Oh, that's funny, too. I'm trying to look up Sonic Boom while we talk about it.
Yep.
And, of course, I got videos of fighter
different
jets.
Little memes. Oh, how funny, Sonic Boom.
Sonic
yeah.
Boom. Oh, yeah.
Sonic Boom cartoon, that might be a little better.
Yeah.
But we're going to get into Sonic Boom right after these messages.
Smooth.
All right. Welcome back. Still sitting here with Aaron Powell and my man Ed Greer holding it down. This has been a fun one. It's been like a open conversation, dropping facts instead of going, you know, in the normal order. But that's what happens when we're tapping in. It feels like instead of an episode where we're following along with an expert, we have three passionate experts.
Yeah.
So, you know, sorry if you can't follow along. If this one's a little harder for you to follow along, I implore you to tweet us. We will keep the conversation going online.
Please do.
But I feel like we're doing a good job of like weaving in the top and bottom. But, you know, one thing we didn't touch on, and I did say we were going to talk about playing with emotions, is how people reacted to Miles. And once again, this was another thing that we were all so luckily able to experience live and direct. And it was funny when while like Stanley gave it the okay thumbs up and people like us really loved it, you had those fans out there that do what they do anytime any diversity initiative launches a diverse character or switches up or retcons and adds something. You had people complaining that, you know, this is just a move for political correctness and you know, you're just trying to check PC. And, you know, there's many takes that people have, many responses. And mine is always, yep, so what?
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. Like it's a bad thing.
We want to be represented. So
that's like yelling at a dude in a Tesla, like, you're just trying to save the environment.
The one thing that I always balk at and on that regard is when they go, okay, you're just doing this for diversity, you're just doing this for whatever reason. Well, everything is just for some reason. Everything is just for some agenda.
Yeah.
And up until very recently, the agenda has been, I don't want to call it white supremacy, but let's call it white A-OK.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's A-OK.
I like to call it that the one rule that most waves of business go by is called I'm white and I say so. That's usually the reason for a lot of things. And then when we get something, like, it's a comic book character. It's a fictional character.
And he had his own separate but equal universe for a long time. Right. What more do you want?
Yeah, exactly.
They eased you into it. He didn't show up with your mom talking about, I'm your new daddy.
Yeah.
They eased him in.
Well, here's the funny thing about it. And here's my, like, less cynical way of doing it, because I try, you know, as I get deeper in the nerd space and as we become more talking points, I try and like take a little bit of Schnepp energy, because, you know, rest in peace John Schnepp. He always, like, one thing I want to take from him is just his ability to kind of like try and like ease you into it and not be the DMX of nerddom, which I am usually want to do. And the way I look at it is, it honestly, if we're not being just straight up cynical and we're just being facts for facts, before a certain time, media was made for white people.
Yep.
You knew you were creating it for a majority white person. You knew that the only people who needed to relate to it is white people. But what we all know now, especially as all of us are creators, we are writers, we are actors, we work in this industry, so this isn't speculation. This is just facts. When you are creating art, you're trying to touch your audience. You're trying to touch your viewers, and you're going to do everything you can to make them feel included. You're going to do everything you can to look on that screen and have them go, oh, that can be me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for so long, a lot of people of color had to look at these white people on the screen and find themselves in them.
Right.
And in the end, we made it work. And now we're getting to a place where you're getting a lot of creatives who are like, let's switch it up. Let's, you know, create this character who, you know, black kids can look up to and go like, that's me.
Well, but, it's the old quote about how equality seems like oppression when you haven't, you know, and I think that when they see, they don't realize what it was like for me as a little kid to be like looking up to Thor. Thor don't look like nobody that's been in my family history for 150 years. And I got to see myself in this Norse dude with a belt made of cowhide and all this jazz. But you can't see yourself in a Brooklyn teenager when you probably was a teen in Brooklyn. Half these people who are balking at Miles lived Miles' life and say they can't see it themselves in him because of his skin. And I think that's a weird situation. But like you said, Snap Energy, I feel as though it's also the fact that it's belying that jazz about there is no audience for this. When I've gone into several comic book stores and seen people unbitten, like sometimes I've walked into several comic book stores and had a diversity in comics conversation pop up as I walked in the store. I don't know what that's about. And all of a sudden it's time to talk about diversity in comics and how whack it is. And I'm just, one of the main talking points they say is black people and women and lesbians or whatever you want to connect with and Latinos, they don't really read comics. That's so false. And I would just love for that. That is also part of it. It is a business. There is a business reason behind a lot of this diversity, and it is to sell to people who are buying comics that do not happen to look like regular Peter Parker.
Yeah, and lots of times it's just dated information and that you just kept using. Like the example that a black-led, you know, movie can't do well overseas, and then
which is totally
we're so
false.
Surprised that Black Panther is this smash hit that is doing well.
Well, look at Fast and the Furious, which is a black-led movie. Like, get whatever you think out of your mind. Almost all of those actors in that movie, if they're not Latinx people, they're black. The Rock is black. I'm sorry.
People, it's hard for people to forget, but look up his daddy.
His name is Dwayne Johnson.
That's very true.
Dwayne Johnson, okay? His name is Dwayne Johnson. He is, like, no matter how much they've tried to poke up his, I don't think he's ever played a black person explicitly on film, but The Rock is a black dude. He was in a faction called the Nation of Domination based on the Nation of Islam.
Well, he's doing the new Schwarzenegger where it's like, this fool's name is John Matrix, and he got this thick German accent, but he got all the clearances with the Delta Force.
Right.
Oh, well. They do that with Dwayne right now.
They did
they
that with Jean-Claude Van Damme in Street Fighter, too.
I brought it up, and then
I know, I remember that.
And I called him Russian, even though he is
He's
not.
The muscles from Brussels.
But so when Miles, some of the reactions to him, yes, there were some people who definitely balked at him.
Oh, yeah.
And there were also the people, let's kind of talk about some of the people who are just like, well, why can't he just have his own thing?
Oh, let's,
You know what I mean? Because there are some people like that.
Yeah. And they really try and make that strong argument of like, yeah, if he had his own thing, that'd be better than just rebranding XYZ. And really, it's coming from the same place. I think, you know, I think there is a corner of people who, like, it is driven by racism. But I think there is another corner of people who just don't like change. I think it could, even if it was like, you know, Rami Schwartz, and it was like just this new Jewish kid who was Spider-Man.
Right.
People would be just as mad. And it was just because they're like, you're changing the thing that I like. And for some reason, I'm forgetting that I always have every future iteration of the thing. And what's funny is like people being mad about Miles Morales, they were actually doing that thing that people try and say, whereas like we are creating this own thing, but now it's a problem.
Now it's a problem because like they weren't saying, could they create their own thing with the 8 kid flashes we've had. No one's saying that, you know, but we get a black kid flash, now it's a problem. Why can't he have his own thing? Okay, yeah, a black dude running fast, kind of racist, but, you know, his name is Wally, which is an old black man's name, but, you know.
Well, I mean,
are you happy with the first one? That second one feel like a reach. Wally wanted him old black.
Willis West. Anyway, the thing I was thinking about also is given these legacy characters, personally, I think I am one of the few fans that I love the fact that he's Spider-Man. I love the fact that he has spider powers, but he's more than Spider-Man as well. It's almost like he's in a situation where Cassandra Cain Batgirl was in for a long time. Cassandra Cain as Batgirl was, for my generation, the best Batgirl ever. She was whooping all kind of ass, and she could do so many things that Barbara Gordon could not do because she was different.
And she didn't speak.
Full stop. She was different. Yeah. She had a bunch of different stuff, And Miles has so many different things. I would love to see him become a character kind of like the Scarlet Spider or the Nightwing situation or something mm-hmm. like that. If they did that organically, I would not think that that was capitulating to racism or whatever. Yeah. I would just think that was like, because if he's not right. going to be the Spider-Man of a universe, this whole two Spider-Man jazz does weird me out.
It does.
It kind of does. And what are you trying to do? It's like, it'd be like if there was a Daredevil that fought in this three acre section of Kel's Kitchen, and then a Daredevil that was chilling in Manhattan and had better suits and better clothes and stuff. That's kind of how they did it for a minute. Yeah. And now Spider-Man's a poor bum again. They made him lose his company mm-hmm. to ground him a little bit. It's almost like people forget that what they love about Spider-Man is their own youth.
Yeah.
Their own youth. They right. were sitting on the bed at 14 and they was reading about this white Spider-Man going through his troubles, eating his wheat cakes, and that was their dude. You know what I'm saying?
And of course, since you brought it up, we're going to stop and talk about Kwong's toy collection, because, you know, everyone has a collection in mind when you think of someone's toy collection. But let me tell you my experience of witnessing the glory that is Kwong's toy collection. I was at... Was it a Christmas party? No, it was the Christmas party.
Yesterday's Christmas
y'all
party.
Y'all yeah. have the best Christmas party, and I am waiting for my invite for this year.
Oh, yeah, it's coming.
And that Secret Santa, I got sniped. Oh, boy. Don't think I'm not still mad about that.
What did you have in your hands?
Oh, it was the, it was so good. It was the Mickey Mouse toaster.
where it scores Mickey Mouse.
Yeah,
the
and
toast.
I was like, oh, this is dope. It's going to be for Naomi. Right. She's good. Yeah. And someone, and we, so just to, so people understand what we're talking about, we're doing Secret Santa in the sense where everyone brings a gift. It's in the pile.
It's like a white elephant.
White elephant, yeah.
But it's a good gift.
But yeah, it gets pretty vicious.
Yeah. So everyone can swap two times. So you and if you and everyone can only get stolen from two times. So if after you get stolen from the second time, you're safe. So I was stolen from once. It was like the last round too, and I was like, I think I'm good. I had this Mickey Mouse toaster. And then, nope, someone stole and gave me this creepy doll that's a light. And, you know, it's a cool doll, but also very creepy.
Yeah. It comes with a ghost, too, yeah. So yeah. No fun.
Actually, no, someone stole the ghost from me because yeah. that was, because I think that was my first thing, and I was like, oh, no.
Don't want this.
And someone was like, oh, no, this is my bag.
Yeah, I think it's creepy, the doll light. Yeah.
But so we go I think it was Kwong who was like, you want to see my toy collection? And we were like, yeah.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. But I was game after the ghost doll. I'm like, let's go.
Let's see this.
And we go to like your basement and you turn on a light and it was the most toys I've seen in one place. And this is someone who's been to Meltdown, rest in peace. And so, like, it was just so many, and I was like, oh, this is what I need in life. I wish I can have this many dope toys.
You know, I was really lucky that my mom just really didn't throw anything away. and in all honesty, I've gone through like a lot of different times of collecting. I've been collecting like designer vinyl toys for a very long time, and I actually weirdly went through a phase of where I got so over it when, you know, eBay sort of took hold mm-hmm. of it, and like the prices just went out of control, you know, and so I actually stepped away from the hobby for a long time, and then I took a trip to Japan, and then there's a store kit called a Mandrake out there, which is, you know, there's like,
it's a chain, there's a few of
yeah
them,
there's yeah. a chain yeah there's a chain of them there's a you know but the one that I was first introduced to is basically like an 8-story mall where each floor is like a different like era of toy.
Wow.
And the shelves are just packed and you can only fit like one person through at a time through the aisles. And the prices at the time were very good. And I basically was just like, I'm back in.
Yeah. You're like, this is what, yeah, yeah. I'm thinking I'm back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you know, I never asked this because you just kind of started doing it. But I mean, you're an artist, so you've always been around the toy culture. But when was the moment you were like, I'm jumping in this. I'm going to make a toy. Rocom needs a toy out.
It's honestly being friends with Kwong.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've skipped this, but Kwong and I, we started this thing with our friend DJ.
Oh, yeah.
This,
that's, yeah, let's talk about
in
that.
In an enamel pin company called Yesterday's. And mm-hmm. so... you know, started 4 years ago, and slowly we became the official pin makers for the band The Misfits, for The Walking Dead comics, for Saga, a bunch of comic books. And so it takes us to all these comic book conventions. But aside from us hanging out all the time through that company, Kwong and our friend Justin Ishmael, he makes really great licensed toys. He's worked with Famous Monsters magazine. He's working on a Billy Bob toy right now, which is from Showbiz Pizza.
Oh wow!
It's like Rock that Empire explosion.
Yeah. And Spawn. Yeah. And so they're always painting and working on toys, and I'm sitting here, a dude that's supposed to be the artist, and I don't have my toy, and so I'm like, "Where's my toy?"
Yeah.
And so, Jet Jaguar had been a huge thing in my collection, so I wanted to kind of create that thing where, here's my addition to that, you know, because, I think even if you look at Funmaker Mike from Funko, he was looking for a Billy Bob bobblehead. Bob's Big Boy bobblehead. And he was on eBay looking at it, and it was just so expensive. He's like, for these prices, I'm going to make one. And so he went to Bob's Big Boy, and he got his first bobblehead done. And so for me, looking for Jet Jaguar toys all the time, I'm like, I'm going to make my evil version.
Yeah.
And like, I could have all of them.
That's so dope. There's so many dope variants too, because there's the Doom one that we talked about that only I got. Sorry.
Dude, people keep asking Kwong too. They're like, yo, like, can you do another one? I was like, we can't do Iffy Wrong like that. He's got the one off.
Look, you know I would never be mad at y'all, but don't do that. Yeah, and so we are running low on time, but I just want to, I guess we'll TLDR, kind of just some of the basics, some of the quick questions we have, because there are some things that, you know, knowing y'all and talking to y'all about toy, you know, culture, that there's like all these like different things without like quote unquote spilling tea or anything, but just like, you know, honor things that I thought was kind of cool. Like, so, I'm gonna let you guide that one so I don't like, you know, say too much.
So, you just mean in collecting and, for collecting, custom, everything customs, we do,
yeah, basically,
right on. As a maker, I think, there's always that thing between, you know, when I was getting my toy made, the number one question was like, where's it being made?
Yeah.
Is it Japanese? Is it Chinese? You know, like, because some collectors are very particular in that stuff and that they kind of hate on different things. And what's funny is they don't understand that collectors in Japan don't care. If your toy is dope, it's dope. And they want it in their collection. And so there's little things like that are interesting, but it's slowly washing away. It's definitely an old school mentality.
Well, that's so funny because I feel like that happens to a lot of like westernized fandoms, because I feel like it's the same way with
the anime question, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's actually something that's being addressed with a lot of people, that it is a western thing.
Yeah.
That they definitely see, like, hey, like in Japan, they're like, "Oh, I don't care. Yeah. It's cool." You know? Right. I think that the word Sufubi was for a long time exclusively used as like high-end Japanese kind of thing. And then the people in Japan are like, no, it's all called Sufubi.
It's all soft vinyl.
It's legitimately just soft vinyl.
Oh, wow. Just so. Like anime is literally animation. Yeah. And people are like, no, it has to be in Japan. And it has to look Full Metal Alchemist. Yeah, that's so crazy. How is it? So we talked about kind of like the creation of a toy.
As a painter.
Yeah, as a painter, how is it for you, Kwong, when you, like, what, obviously I think the answer to this is going to be like things that look cool to me, but like how do you decide like, oh, that's a toy that I want to paint, and how do you kind of come up with the design?
It comes with textures, and a lot of it, you get really high, and I mean that because of there's like a lot of chemicals involved.
Yeah.
And so you got to be really careful. There's
toxic paint.
Yeah, that you have to wear gloves. There's like, I have to wear a respirator. You know, it's not, I wouldn't call it dangerous, mm-hmm. but there is a lot of chemicals involved. And that's something that, like, as a toy painter, you have to know, because there is a responsibility to your customers. And the paint that I use specifically, it's designed for toys, vinyl toys. It chemically bonds. And that's why when you'll take your Marvel Legends action figure and you'll paint on it with acrylics and it'll just rub off.
Yeah.
Well, part of that chemical mixture is making sure there's the right amount of thinner and everything that goes along with it, so that it's just adhering correctly to the figure. And if you don't, you can spray, you know, I've had guys that will paint figures with acrylics and they're like, oh, I clear coat them all, but your figures end up like sticky, you know, and like things like that, that, you know, for anybody that buys one of my toys, I like, you know, and Rocom has definitely seen me like really like toil over this kind of thing where I'm like, oh man, it's not right. Like I need another day to make this perfect because somebody's going to go home with this and this is my reputation.
Right, you can't have them paying like $300, take this thing home, yeah, and then the paint's flaking off of it, you know?
Right, and so that's something I take very seriously. And so when it comes to like color combinations and various things when it comes to the toys, I'll just look at something and see how it's textured, what it vibes with. There's a lot of like painting something that looks like something else, like your Death Jaguar I painted to look like Doom because I looked at it and it, you know, it has like this vibe of like the Iron Mask. You know, with the robot face and everything else, and Doom is a character that I like. I'm a big Jack Kirby fan, and that's another thing people like nerd out when they come over is I have like a Jack Kirby original, and so you know I always try to pay homage to those guys, you know, to things that I love, and I think when people look at some of my custom work, they kind of get like if they would like me as a person, you know, like I try to put a little bit of that in my work. To where they might be able to get my personality a little bit more, or they're like, oh yeah, he obviously really likes like John Carpenter movies or things like that, like, you know, certain references.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Wow, those were great. Look, I'm gonna keep it real with you. I don't know what that sound like. We recorded this before we could put the clips together, but you know, I wanted you to feel like I was right there with you.
What if it was all of the moments that we like messed up the most? I trust. I know that those were all of our greatest hits. Our greatest hits, and we will be back next week with an all new Nerdificent. So stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.